this is a once in a species moment, right? We're not going back to the moon to step on it. We're going back to stay and to become a truly interplanetary species. I find that is one of the most exciting things to think about in our lifetime.
When Neil Armstrong landed on the moon in 1969, it was as much about America asserting its dominance over Russia amid the Cold War as it was about advancing humanity. Fast forward more than 50 years, and today's space race is fueled by billionaires, capitalism, and the rush to stake a claim on the moon's resources. Dr. Pippa Melgren, best-selling author and former advisor to President George W. Bush, believes the next catalyst for conflict won't be in the Ukraine or Gaza, but will be in space. Pippa, thanks for joining me today. So this isn't just science fiction. Are Star Wars already raging out in space?
Well, yeah, and you mentioned both Ukraine and Gaza, both of which are effectively satellite-based conflicts. The Ukrainians have only been able to hold their ground, really, because of Starlink and space-based assets that allow them to operate much more effectively on the ground. In fact, to the point that at one stage the Chinese said, we're going to designate you as a military company because of your assistance. And they said, well, it's just humanitarian. And the Chinese said, no, we don't think it is. And they turned down the bandwidth on the Ukrainians. And similarly, in Gaza, it seems that the Iranian Nord 3 satellite that went up like 2 weeks before the events with Hamas in Gaza probably was used to provide Hamas with some superpower level ground intelligence. That was their first satellite that could hover, for example. So we are already in conflict in space.
Now, NASA is planning a nuclear fission plant on the moon to create safe, clean, and reliable energy. This is kind of a big deal if you can prove this technology in space, but what are the implications for Earth?
Yes. Well, first, let's understand why there's this race into space, and it is a proper all-out geopolitical race right now, not only between the superpowers, but secondary powers like India and even Turkey are all racing to get a foothold on the lunar surface. So what's driving it is, number one, there are so many prizes, and one of them is the real prospect of unlimited clean green energy, first from space-based solar power, where you catch the sun's rays off of satellites and convert them into radio waves and beam them safely back to Earth to have unlimited energy potentially. And we're probably only 3 years away from that. But also nuclear fusion and nuclear fission. So fission is the discussion about putting small nuclear reactors on the moon and in orbit, which is what we have with our nuclear-powered submarines, for example. So that's proven technology that Rolls-Royce makes. But nuclear fusion is a new process that's making headway really quickly. And to do that, you really need helium-3. And it turns out that there's lots of that on the moon. And so there's a race to get there for those reasons. But there are other drivers as well, like the prospect of creating mega constellations of communication satellites that would blanket Earth in world-class internet anywhere in the world, which would lift the value of every square inch of Earth. And then, of course, there is asteroid mining, which sounds really science fiction, but it's coming fast. And that is an entirely new supply chain for the Earth economy. So we're solving a lot of Earthbound problems with space-based solutions, potentially.
And one of the reasons the moon is so interesting right now is the abundance of helium-3, which can potentially be used in nuclear fusion. Some scientists, though, they say that there can be enough to power the Earth for 1,000 years. And in fact, 1 ton of helium-3 has a market value of about $4 billion. Is this behind the recent push to the moon?
It's only one strand of many. The other is the realization that asteroids can be mined. And NASA has recently brought back samples from an asteroid called Bennu. That's the furthest reach we've ever had. So we now know that we can go out into space and gather things like lithium, cobalt, gold, iron ore. And this is a major driver behind the introduction of space-based manufacturing, space-based refining, also rare earth metals. And there's a very interesting project NASA has underway called the Psyche mission. And it said that Psyche is so valuable as an asteroid. It has so much gold and iron ore and all these important metals for manufacturing that it's worth 700 times the value of the annual world economy. And if you were to distribute the value of Psyche to every single human, every person would be a billionaire. That's how valuable all this stuff is. So it's not just helium-3, it's many things.
And there's a whole bunch of startups that are promising near-term asteroid mining. From what you had described, it sounds like this is a lot closer than perhaps people think.
I think it really is. I think that asteroid mining is happening really fast, but probably it won't be commercialized for a decade. But nonetheless, it has real implications for the value of assets on Earth, raw materials, or economies that depend on mining. If there's an alternative source of rare earth metals, for example, then that has enormous implications. And again, if we can start to harvest energy from space through space-based solar power or nuclear fusion, this will have a dramatic impact on the price of oil and gas. And that is one reason the Saudis are already backing the British for their first space-based solar power project, because they understand that oil and gas may really lose value once these alternative clean green energy sources come online.
Pippa, thanks. Now let's check in with our resident economist, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. Today's space race is fueled by billionaires.
Thanks, Pamela. Yeah, so space spending for many people probably still conjures up images of cosmonauts, the Apollo project, or the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. But this view of space being about big, government-led pushes is actually now very out of date. The data clearly shows that space spending has been dominated by the private sector for well over a decade now. At present, nearly 80% of the space economy is actually commercial spending. The largest area of investment is in commercial infrastructure spending. So this is private companies like Google or Facebook investing in satellites. But of course, these satellites have to get up there somehow. As such, commercial space products are also a big line item, the likes of Elon Musk and SpaceX developing new rockets and spacecraft. Government spending, by comparison, the bottom bar on the chart if you're watching, is actually relatively small. So, the lion's share of investment in space is by commercial enterprises. And let's be clear, these are companies with shareholders whose primary purpose and reason for existence is to return value to shareholders. The issue here, of course, is how do you regulate all these commercial entities from Earth? Which government jurisdiction do they fall under? The UN has even released a report, For All Humanity, The Future of Outer Space Governance. And with space becoming increasingly cluttered, the belief is that a shared set of rules and resources will help sustainably preserve the rapid pace of innovation. Though some might fear that as soon as regulators get involved, the exact opposite might happen.
Thank you very much for that, Alex. So, obviously, there's this film Wes Anderson had produced, Asteroid City, which received some great reviews. And obviously, it's because of the interest around space and around asteroids. Is there anything along the way in your career where you've seen and heard that surprises you, both in a positive or a negative way?
You know, I'm old enough that I remember when we first stepped on the moon. So in my lifetime, this has all been real, not science fiction. And today, this is a once-in-a-species moment, right? We're not going back to the moon to step on it. We're going back to stay and to become a truly interplanetary species. And I find that is one of the most exciting things to think about in our lifetime.
Now, Pippa, you've advised presidents and prime ministers from your experience dealing with world leaders. Can you describe what would be discussed behind closed doors about this space challenge right now?
Sure. Well, the most difficult part has been sort of kinetic conflict. So we've already seen, for example, a couple of years ago, the Russians destroyed their own satellite. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, but they created this enormous debris field, which creates what they call the Kessler effect, Some describe it as razor blades in a washing machine. It's tons of shrapnel moving at, 18,000 miles an hour. It was part of the reason the International Space Station almost had to be evacuated. And the purpose of the strategy is to deny others, like the United States, use of those orbits. China and the U.S. are the only two countries that have robotic arms on satellites. And China has demonstrated they can go up to a satellite, grab it with the arms, and literally hurl it into outer space, which, of course, is perceived as a threat by the United States. So, yes, the discussion in the strategic security community is about the moon is the new commanding heights of the strategic security environment for all of Earth. And so there is a race from a military perspective, not just a commercial market perspective.
And there are currently pressing conflicts here on Earth with Israel and Gaza and Russia and Ukraine. Will what's happening right now in space dwarf these conflicts?
They are part of the same continuum. Basically, conflicts on Earth are now so heavily reliant on satellites that it's hard to disentangle. Like, for example, about 50 days before the Russian tanks rolled into Ukraine, it is perceived by NATO that Russia tried to cut what is the fastest internet cable in the world, which is in the Arctic Circle. And the reason it's there is because virtually every high-altitude satellite connects to Earth at that point in Svalbard in Norway. Now, that was initially called an act of war by the British Chief of the Defense Forces, but then they quickly realized that this would mean being in immediate direct conflict with Russia, and NATO didn't want that at that point. But this internet cable connection to satellites is so central to the world economy. Basically, when you take that away, it's literally no more Uber Eats. It's no more GPS. It's no more missile guidance systems. So in this sense, our wars are already space-based wars.
Alex touched on the growth of commercial spending in space. What does this mean for investors? Is this a new investment frontier?
It is definitely a new investment frontier, but the really big question is, can you make any money in space? The space is moving incredibly quickly. We already have, for example, the first space factory, the first in-orbit factory went up a few months ago. It's a California company called Varda. But space is super hard. And figuring out which enterprises are really going to work and which aren't is the most difficult thing. So yes, this is a massive innovation space. There are many new companies that are getting funded by NASA and private organizations. We're going to see an explosion of space as a sector, but how to make money in it is a completely different story and really hard to do.
Hard to do, but when it comes to the big investment thematics for space, is it satellites and data? Is it mining asteroids? Or is it new forms of energy, as you mentioned, or something else perhaps, or all of the above?
You know, honestly, it's all of the above, plus stuff that sounds really strange and interesting. Like, for example, there's a reason that all the pharma companies have projects on the International Space Station. Because it turns out that you can make drugs in space because certain ingredients won't bind in gravity, but they will in zero gravity. Or the production of fiber optic cables, because if you make them on Earth, they get bubbles in them because of gravity. But if you make them in a zero gravity environment, no bubbles, faster transmission rate. And maybe the biggest story of all is startups that are beginning to prepare for the production of semiconductor chips in space. Because it's a natural clean room. You can produce with 60-70 higher percent efficiency. We're already seeing this as a growing new sector. And let's face it, NASA's already commissioned the first power grid on the lunar surface, the first oxygen grid. The build is underway.
Is this potentially a solution with more of these tech companies looking to produce and manufacture chips in space?
It is. And again, it sounds so far away, but, companies, I know SpaceForge, a British company, has already begun moving in this direction. And look, chip production is moving so fast these days. The hardware is now the focus. It, you know, used to be that we assumed everything could be done in Taiwan, but geopolitics has made that a trickier option. Now it's all moving to Texas and Arizona, and the next place it's going is up.
Wow. Well, you can't really talk about space without mentioning Elon Musk and SpaceX. Are there any potential challengers to Elon Musk's dominance, or is SpaceX just too far ahead?
You know, there are challengers. SpaceX, the big story now, is their Starship, which is a 100-ton payload, effectively space truck, that will go not just up, but come back. And this is the beginning of the back and forth as we start to bring assets back from space, like refined rare earth metals or helium-3, all sorts of things. And there are competitors in that delivery process. But then it goes a step further. And we have to now think, look, space isn't about astronauts anymore, glamorous as that is. Space is really inhospitable to human beings. This is now going to be about self-assembling, self-replicating robotics led by AI, remote control, probably automated as well. And they will be constructing both in orbit and on asteroid surfaces and on the lunar surface. And this is a whole different space than what SpaceX has been in. And interestingly, the Pentagon has just said to SpaceX that now we know how to do this, we'd like to start doing our own launches without SpaceX. So SpaceX has been amazing. It's going to continue to be a powerful, strong company in this space, but there are lots of competitors.
Pippa, maybe you can speak to perhaps some people who have doubts about space, who are fearful of the prospects of jobs being removed or having to be reskilled and trained for those opportunities. What would you say to those people?
So bottom line is, I think space is going to create an enormous number of new jobs on Earth because humans are not going to be going into space so much. But we are going to have people working, frankly, off a laptop, managing operations that are in orbit or on the lunar surface. And maybe an even bigger question is not so much about the jobs, but, you know, how humanity steps into this new period of history. And there's a really open question. Should the first human institution on the moon be a military base or a mining company or something else? This is a job creator and, frankly, a world that has unlimited energy, potentially unlimited resources and unlimited internet connectivity. That is a recipe for growth.
And potentially some supply chain problems solved.
Exactly. Space-based solutions to earthbound problems.
And Pippa, what is your parting wisdom on this topic? What's the takeaway here?
The takeaway is that everybody thinks space has nothing to do with them, and they are wrong, because space is set to provide so many solutions to earthbound problems. It is the new supply chain for the Earth economy, and I think it will lift the value of every square inch on Earth as we expand into space.
Well, thank you very much to our special guest, Pippa Malmgren, best-selling author and former advisor to President George W. Bush, and our resident expert, Alex Holmes from Oxford Economics. Thank you both. And thanks for tuning in to Episode 3 of I See Your Trade, Season 4. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, the leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. See you next time.